Hey there, and welcome to episode number 166 of Marvel by the Month, the Eisner Award-nominated acknowledged podcast that takes you through the history of Marvel Comics one month at a time. In this episode, that month is November 1971. My name is Brian Stratton.
Mine is Rob Milne.
And mine is Jamie Wenger.
Jamie's back!
I mean,
you're sort of back. You're still on vacation, sort of. But yeah,
I'm still away for sure.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious that like the way that we have recorded episodes the last few weeks is just going to make it seem like you were out of town for months.
That's a little bit how it feels. I haven't seen you guys in forever.
Yeah, you left us. You got COVID. You're still gone. You haven't come back. Yeah.
So, which leads me to feel like maybe I should stay closer to you guys for like safety from now on. It seems like I'm maybe no good on my own, which is, that's my working theory.
I possess your antibodies. Yeah.
I think you made the mistake of getting on an airplane because that's what did it for me. So.
Yeah. Or, and I went over and then I went down. So I've spread my COVID to the world, but I had the good kind that makes you more handsome. So
excellent.
You're welcome, New Jersey.
Well, we also have another very special guest joining us for this episode. He is a host of some of the best podcasts in the biz, including Good Morning Night Vale, We Got This, and Tights and Fights. You know him as Steve Carlsberg from Welcome to Night Vale, Wide Whale from Venture Brothers, and MODOK from Marvel Squirrel Girl, the unbeatable radio show. Hal Lublin, welcome back to Marvel by the Month.
Thank you. It's so nice to be back. And thank you for the Marvel. We talked about this before the episode aired. This is the Marvel by the Month bump. I did the show and then I got Squirrel Girl. So what's next?
I know.
What's on cast in the greater MCU now?
Yeah.
I'm just saying I'm available, Kevin Feige. One time I saw you at a party, but did not say hello because I did not want to bother you.
Aw, that's kind. I bet he doesn't get that very often.
No. No problem going up to George R. R. Martin. A lot of problem going up to, I mean, he was dressed like a leather daddy.
George was?
Ooh.
Yes. I think that's just how he dresses. He's got a leather vest on, the cap. He looked like he was in the Blue Oyster from the Police Academy movies. Terrible stereotype, but we all know what I'm talking about when I say that, like leather bar sort of look.
Or the biker gang pursuing the Blues Brothers. Yeah.
Yeah. He looks like an extra in Cruisin', is what I'm saying.
Do you think that's just a side effect of being a Jets fan, or do you think the two are unrelated?
I mean, at a certain point, you have to be driven mad, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You can't help it anymore.
Well, yeah, Hal, congratulations on becoming a member of the Marvel Podcastic Universe.
Thank you.
Squirrel Girl, it's so much fun. You're so good in it. And Jamie, in particular, is very familiar with this podcast.
Yes, my now six-year-old, was five, latched onto that show like you would not believe. And so every day we listened to every episode that was available until the next one came out, and then we would do the same thing again. So I've heard that podcast maybe more than you. That seems like a safe assumption.
I bet so. That's awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah. It was fun for a bit.
And now you're glad to be free of it.
Is there more? Are there more coming? Is that
I hope so. I haven't heard anything.
Okay, but, well, now that you've been back on, I'm sure you'll probably get word in the next couple of days.
I'm sure. Right, the phone call is coming. I'll tell them to release all the episodes at once, so you just have to listen to it one time.
You know what? I would appreciate that. That would be very helpful.
Yeah. Although that's not how kids work. They love listening to something over and over and over and over. But, I mean, hey, if you got to listen to something over and over, that's not the worst choice in the world. So
no, definitely not. Yeah. It's an awesome show. Highly recommended.
Thank you. Is that something we're supposed to grow out of, watching things over and over again? Because I definitely watch the same things over and over again. I can't stop.
Yeah. I have bought like the same comics in like six different versions now. So I think that's just, we're trapped in whatever we thought was great when we were 9 to 17.
Okay. Well, I mean, I've watched the scene from Thor Ragnarok where Zeppelin starts playing the second time. I'd say 100 times. So yeah, sure.
You're keeping that brain elastic. That's great.
Yeah.
There's something new to find every time. It's so busy.
There's another ab or I couldn't even name a muscle in the forearm. I pointed. I couldn't, and not a single one. I was trying to say you could find a new muscle in the whatever, but I.
The Popeye I mean, zone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know.
Oh, the Popeye zone.
Yeah. The spinach muscles.
Right. Right.
We know that a former guest of ours and a friend of yours, John Hodgman, you know, had ambitions of being MODOK in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Did this put a strain on your relationship with him?
We haven't spoken since it happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Listen, he works enough. I'm okay with it. I think it was right before it was released, they canceled the Hulu series.
Oh, right. The one that Patton was on. Yeah.
Which is a shame. He's very talented, funny, great.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun too.
But now I'm the last MODOK standing. Right now, I am
floating.
MODOK.
You're floating. But
I'm floating. I'm still in my chair with a giant head floating. I'm the last MODOK floating right now.
You deserve it. No one can MODOK better. And we were trying to find a month of comics where MODOK showed up. But unfortunately, we're in a bit of a MODOK dry spell. He did show up about 12 months ago with a scheme to destroy a bunch of tenements in Harlem. So, I mean, consider that a bullet dodged, I guess.
Yeah, I'm so grateful. You know, he'll show up again. This won't be the last time I'm on here, I'm sure, unless I say something terrible. We're talking about Batman, right? All right, I'm ready.
Exactly. Well, Hal, so happy to have you back and so excited to talk about the Marvel Comics of November 1971 with you. But before we jump into that, we are going to give a little bit of historical context for what else was happening in the world in November of 1971. So, Rob, why don't you start us off with some comics news?
Sure. Gold Key launched a couple of new series in November 1971. Hanna-Barbera's The Hair Bear Bunch, based on the cartoon of the same name.
Classic.
Yep. I pronounced that correctly. And Grimm's Ghost Stories, number one. The first Creation comic book convention was held on November 26th through 28th at the New Yorker Hotel in New York City. The show was produced by 14-year-old Queens schoolboys Adam Mollin and Gary Berman.
Whoa.
And the guest of honor was Jim Steranko.
Hey. Whoa, whoa, whoa. We know that guy.
Wow, 14 years old? That's crazy.
Yeah, not bad.
On November 2nd, off-year elections were held for governors and state legislators in the United States, including the election for governor of Mississippi. It was the first election in that state in which an African-American challenged a white nominee. Bill Waller, the Democratic nominee, was a prosecutor who had unsuccessfully sought to convict the accused murderer of civil rights activist Medgar Evers. His independent challenger, James Charles Evers, was the brother of Medgar and the incumbent mayor of the primarily black municipality of Fayette, Mississippi. Waller won overwhelmingly with over 75% of the vote in a race that had unprecedented voter turnout.
And then on the 6th of November, the U.S. tested a thermonuclear warhead in Alaska after federal courts denied a petition by environmentalists to prevent the test, codenamed Project Kanakin, which is like the most adorable name for a nuclear test I can think of.
Yeah.
Project Kanakin.
I want to noogie that little Kanakin.
at around 5 megatons, it was the largest ever U.S. underground detonation. And the test went
ahead. So less cute, I guess.
Yeah.
At that girth.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't put a size on cute. I think 5 megatons is you could absolutely be cute at 5 megatons.
Oh, sure. You know what? I stand corrected. You're 100% right.
The cloud winked. How cute. It was winking at us.
The test went ahead as scheduled as the U.S. Supreme Court voted 4-3 not to allow an injunction for its postponement. Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There were only 7 justices then. So now there are more justices. So you could add more justices to a Supreme Court bench. Ooh. Seems like there's a precedent for that.
Yeah, growth. I like where you're going.
Yeah,
maybe bad idea.
Another 30 or 40.
I don't know. But, you know, just something random thought that popped into my head. Not related to anything.
Yeah. No, it's good to explore all those pathways.
Maybe. I mean, it would be crazy to say you want less justice, right? I mean, the more justice, the better is how it sounds to me.
Yeah. We're justice lovers here.
Yeah. We love justice. That's why we read comics. So In metal-ish by the month news, on the 8th of November, the fourth best-selling record album of all time, the untitled fourth studio album of Led Zeppelin, was released, making its debut in the United States 4 days before its November 12th release in the United Kingdom. It contained the band's most popular song, Stairway to Heaven.
On that same day, Berkeley, California became the first sanctuary city in the United States with the passage of an ordinance that prohibited its city employees, including its police, from enforcing federal arrest warrants for nonviolent offenses. The sanctuary city concept was later adopted in other politically liberal communities in the United States.
But then on the same day, the U.S. House of Representatives considered but failed to pass a proposed amendment to the United States Constitution that would have permitted voluntary prayer in public schools. The proposed 27th Amendment received 240 votes in favor and 162 against, but constitutional amendments required a two-thirds majority. So 1971 is kind of all over the map politically.
Yeah. On the 10th of November, the U.S. Senate voted 84-6 to ratify the Okinawa Reversion Agreement, returning the island of Okinawa and other Japanese territory captured in 1945 during World War II to Japanese control. The treaty provided that the United States would be able to maintain its military bases on Okinawa, but it would not be able to launch military operations from the bases without consultation and approval by the Japanese government.
Whoa, that is a lot longer than I thought that we had those things.
That's we were like Little Britain, you know, we just stay there for a while.
Little Britain, you know, cute.
Yeah.
On November 15th, Intel announced the world's first commercially viable microprocessor, the Intel 4004, a 4-bit central processing unit. Sold for $60, it was the first in a long line of Intel CPUs. Oh, that's cool.
Yep.
Four bits.
And then on the 20th of November, Joel McHale, the American comedian and TV actor best known for playing an obnoxious bank teller in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2, was born in Rome.
In Rome?
Yeah,
Rome,
he was raised in Seattle, but he was born in Rome. Yeah. On the 24th of November, during a severe thunderstorm over Washington, a man calling himself D.B. Cooper parachuted from Northwest Orient Airlines Flight 305, a Boeing 727 that he had hijacked with $200,000 in ransom money. He was never apprehended, and nearly 50 years later, the case would remain the only unsolved skyjacking in history. I have personally looked through some Washington and Oregon woods for that money. Didn't find it.
Isn't it an Asgard?
It must be.
Hasn't that mystery been solved?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, I assume if it's canon in the MCU, it's canon in real life, right?
Yeah, that stands to reason, sure.
Makes sense to me.
Well, then, we know.
I didn't even know that D.B. Cooper was a thing until I moved out to Oregon. I don't know. Is this something that, like, Jamie and Hal, you guys are both East Coasters. Did you know about D.B. Cooper growing up?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, yep, it's like not an urban legend, because obviously it actually happened, but, like, the like, charming Ocean's 11-y kind of, like, bank robber, you know, who is suave and cool. You know, he's kind of a hero to the people. If you take that story at a shallow level. I've heard that for sure.
Yeah, okay. I think, I don't know if you encountered it, Jamie, in the same place I did the first time, but I think I read about it in an Uncle John's bathroom reader, which I have, I think, behind me.
That would be
like
awesome.
The first 12 of them. They're still, like, right... I'm pointing at them. They're behind the Wampa and Luke Skywalker. That shelf is almost all bathroom readers. The greatest books ever, ever. Or like, if you want to be in your knowledge, they are not paying me. I wish they were. If you want to be like an inch deep but a mile wide in the things that you know, read Uncle John's bathroom reader. They are great. Yeah. Whatever length. Quick one. They have you covered. Long one, they have you covered.
Keep the eyes busy as you come out of the room with a ton of interesting information whoever is unfortunate enough to be near that bathroom door.
Yeah. Yep. If you're look. We all make duties. We're not gonna sugarcoat this. Spend that time productively. Get off your phone, crane your neck. It's bad for you. Hold up a book. Become a well-read human. Exactly. And he's in the bath. It's a bathtub reader. It's a bathroom. It doesn't just mean ones and twos. You can have it when you're taking a not a shower. That would be a bad idea. In the bathtub. In the bathtub setting. Many times have I read those in the bathtubs. Perfect.
Some candles, some incense. You set the mood, and then you get your bathroom reader. I'm with you. 100%.
You read about D.B. Cooper.
I think we found the solution to our problems with public education. It's just a complete set of Uncle John bathroom readers in every classroom.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Sold.
There you go.
Write your congressperson. Yeah.
Today. So that's a glimpse of what was happening in the world in November of 1971. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk about what was happening in the Marvel Comics of November 1971 right here on Marvel by the Month. Hey there, as regular listeners know, each episode this season is sponsored by one of Marvel's 1971 advertisers pulled from the pages of the very issues that we're reading. And boy, we have really seen the best and worst, and mostly the worst, of what the early 70s has had to offer. Rob, what are we telling the listeners about this week?
20 almost rare stamps. Yours free when you send 10 cents for mailing.
Okay, well, the catch is right there in the headline. That's pretty bold.
Yeah, but if that's as bad as it gets, then I guess this is probably one of our better ones.
From 12 lost nations, most a half century old.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay, half century. That would put us about, the early 20th century.
We'd like to send you a score of postage stamps from nations overrun by invaders in the 19th and 20th century and never freed again.
Oh, boy.
You never really think about imperialism as improving the collectability of something.
And from our approval service, we'll include 110 additional stamps from Britain's Lost Empire.
As I'm sure they never called themselves.
The valuable Lost Nation stamps are yours to keep free as an introduction to the world's most rewarding hobby.
I guess, like imperialism, whoever's doing the collecting is getting the rewards.
Yeah, have we done enough to fulfill our contractual obligation? Okay, well, thanks to the Kenmore Company of Milford, New Hampshire, for sponsoring this episode of Marvel by the Month.
Milford.
Oh, God. We are also supported each and every week by our Patreon subscribers who help us make this show week in and week out.
Do you think we can get Marvel's own MODOK on this show without waving a few stacks of cash around? Well, we can, because Hal's a great guy. But that's beside the point.
All of our Patreon supporters at the $4 a month level get instant access to our bonus feed of content, which has over 50 extended and exclusive episodes, with more being added each week.
Those extended episodes feature deeper dives into more comics with some of our favorite guests.
And we've been doing this show long enough that some of those guests have multiple extended episodes. Guests like Chelsea Kane, Ilana Levin, Tom Brevoort, Elliot Kalin, Douglas Wolk, Joe Keating, Noah Campbell, and Katie Pride.
I've lost count of how many Eisner Awards are in that group. It's a lot.
Yeah. Thank you so much to all of our Patreon subscribers for making it easy for us to bring the show to you every single week. And if you want to help us do that and get access to that bonus feed, head to patreon.com/MarvelByTheMonth and support us today.
Welcome back to Marvel by the Month. Let's do the rundown. We're going to take deep dives into three issues in this episode: Amazing Spider-Man number 105, featuring the return of the Spider Slayer; Incredible Hulk number 148, featuring the return of Jarella; and Marvel Premiere number 1, featuring the return of him with a new name and new outfit. Ooh. Our Patreon subscribers will get to hear all of those in the extended version of this episode, but there are 8 other issues that came out this month that we won't be diving deep into this episode. We're saving Avengers number 96 for an episode that you should hear next week if all goes according to plan. And here's what's happening in the other 7, how these are the issues we didn't have you read. So let us know if we chose poorly. So first, Astonishing Tales number 10, To End in Flame, written by Roy Thomas and Jerry Conway, art by Barry Not Yet Windsor Smith and Sal Buscema. This issue concludes the story of Kazar finding a group of German and English soldiers who have been perpetually warring with each other since becoming stranded in the Savage Land during World War II. The second generation of soldiers learned that the fathers of each tribe have been secretly colluding to keep the war going and keep them tough. Featuring Zabu.
I think we're good so far.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing that that's a Kazar story. Like it's his comic, but like you don't you literally don't need him in that description.
Not at all.
Yeah,
no, super. No. Sounds like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah,
almost. Yeah. Like a very good Twilight Zone plot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie, what do you got?
I have Captain America 146 Mission: Destroy the Fem Force. Which, again, is not how mission titles should work. But it was written by Gary Friedrich, art by Sal Buscema, and John Verputin. So Hydra is back, and they're keeping S.H.I.E.L.D.'s regular forces so busy that S.H.I.E.L.D. has to send the newly formed Fem Force, accompanied by Captain America, to investigate what turns out to be the main Hydra assault. Sharon Carter is gravely wounded, then kidnapped. The shady Supreme Hydra reports to a shadowy figure, and the Falcon rejects S.H.I.E.L.D.
Ooh.
A lot happened. It was busy. Promulent issue of comic. I was entertained.
I'm based on what I've read for this episode. Oh, that sounds. But you know what it is? I realized I need to re-up. Like, I had Marvel Unlimited, then I dropped it.
Yep.
I need to go back in. I literally was reading these and going, like, you know, I should read the entire run of the Fantastic Four from 1 to... What are they up to now? 3 million?
Yeah.
Is that where I'm
at? Yeah. Right. Yeah. Be careful, though. You might get into a mess like we're in now.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we should read every Marvel comic from that's a superhero from 1961.
Yeah.
And Rob, here we are.
I may already be starting at Garfield podcast. What started as a joke may become an actual, like, me going through all the Garfield comic. So I already, just even the discussion of it, just as
that's amazing.
I love that.
So the episodes have to either definitely come out on Monday or never come out on Monday.
Exactly. It's going to be one or the other.
Okay. Well, here's one I'm going to tell you right now that you're glad you missed. Daredevil number 84, Night of the Assassin, written by Jerry Conway, art by Gene Colan and Sid Shores. So the Black Widow invites old Hornhead for some skiing, some romance, and some intrigue. That all sounds good. But also the assassin, who's I don't even want to get into it. It has been this long-running subplot throughout, like, multiple titles, and he keeps changing up the character, and it never really adds up to much. But he finally winds up luring Daredevil and Black Widow into a trap on behalf of his mysterious boss from the future. The whole thing gets tied off in this issue in a way that doesn't make any sense at all.
It makes as much sense as the whole crossover that's been going on with Mr. Klein and the assassin. Who is the assassin? This robot. Yeah.
So is this the end? Was this the wrap-up of
That's the wrap-up. And if you try to explain it to anyone, you sound like you're having a stroke.
Whoa. Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah.
So the end of this issue has two figures from the future. One is a father and one is a quote unquote child.
You're right.
And they've been doing all the,
but yeah
they're right. They're as is the assassin.
Yes.
And they're all
as
trying
is
to prevent.
The, oh yeah. But Baal is the
you see what
AI
I mean?
Who lives at the end
you
of
already
the world.
Sound. Yeah. We already sound like lunatics.
He's 12,000 years in the future. Listen, everybody, this is fine. I did some drugs, but Baal, has sent back a robot in time to try to stop some events that so that there will still be something for him to live on before the world stops in the year 12,000 and something. It's very simple. You know, it all comes together.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds.
So, yeah. And somehow it involves blackmailing Foggy Nelson and.
Yeah. Right.
Of course. Yeah,
I don't know.
The owl was involved. Mm-hmm. So
clean.
Let's talk about Fantastic Four number 119. Three Stood Together. This was written by Roy Thomas, art by John Buscema and Joe Sinnott. Meet the Black Leopard, apartheid prisoner of Rudyarda.
Mm-hmm.
Ben and Johnny show racism who's boss as they team up with the Leopard to take down the human embodiment of sound, the man called Claw. This one was kind of good. It was like South Africa getting beat up by Johnny Storm and Ben Grimm.
Yeah.
While and the Black Panther was in jail and got broken out by them because he was black basically and didn't have his papers. Yeah. So, it's very like all the doors say European or colored over them. And that makes Ben Grimm real mad. Mm-hmm. So there's some cool stuff. And then also the Black Panther calls himself Black Leopard.
Yeah.
So that he doesn't associate it with the Black Panther for some reason.
It's the irony it's an apartheid story during which the Black Panther says, don't call me the Black Panther anymore.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's too controversial.
They did that for a minute. And
gets rescued by
two
white dudes.
Yeah.
For a little while, they're like, we got to cool this down.
Yep. He goes back to it, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, for...
And he points out to Johnny and Ben that, you know, a black leopard is what a Black Panther is. It's just all spots. You know, it's like, that's... Mm. It's the same family. And they're like, okay, well, we didn't come here to learn. We came here to punch signs that say Europeans. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then we also had Iron Man 45. Beneath the Armor Beats a Heart, written by Gary Friedrich and Steve Englehart, art by George Tuska and Vince Coletta. Mr. Klein's web tightens as a corporate coup continues at Stark Industries. Meanwhile, can Tony marry Marianne and keep control of his company? Plus Iron Man versus the Guardsmen versus a bunch of teens.
I love that the Mr. Klein shows up. And there's just a footnote from Stan that says, but Mr. Klein did die in a different issue this very month. So he's not, this was before that, obviously. It's just like Stan wasn't there and nobody cares.
No one stopped it. Yeah. It was so awkward.
Yeah. And then Submariner number 46, the story was called Even the Noble Die. It was written by Jerry Conway with art by Gene Colan and Mike Esposito. So Namor's quest for ultimate vengeance against Lyra is complicated by a captive, long-lost family member, his dad, and also a tiger shark, the tiger shark. help arrives in the unlikely form of the former enemy, Rob's favorite red-caped superhero, Stingray.
Yeah.
I can't tell if my bar for Submariner is so low that it doesn't matter and I'm now enjoying it in spite of itself, or if this was like actually kind of a fun issue. I don't know anymore.
I don't either. I think it's Stockholm Syndrome. I don't have any idea. It seemed okay.
Yeah. They're just like, they're throwing so much plot. There are so many beats into it's like, oh, how about the tiger shark and this guy, maybe Stingray. Like it's just all over the place.
It feels like the Spider-Man 3 movie, like just more villains. We'll just more villains.
Right. Yeah. When your story's not working, throw more characters in. That's writing 101.
Okay, we're going to wrap up the rundown with Thor number 196, Within the Realm of Kartag, or Kartag. I don't know how he pronounces it. Written by Jerry Conway, art by John Buscema and Vince Coletta. The realm of Kartag makes for strange bedfellows as Satrina first enraptures and then guides the Asgardians on their quest for the well at the world's edge.
Can I get that name one more time?
The well at the world's edge.
No. Who is the villainess of the story?
Satrina.
It's like that one stopped me dead in my tracks when I was reading it. It's like, wait, yep. So it's like Satan, like Lady Satan?
Dressed in all red.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And this is all going on while Odin and Hela form a sort of hellish truce as the battle against Mangog goes on in Asgard. While Sif and Hildegard band together to prove their warrior skills somewhere else, which they're also trying to find. They're in like the black world trying to find the well as well. So everybody's trying to do stuff to save Asgard and Odin. Nobody gets back in time. So Odin says, you know what? The world will end, and then just blips Asgard out, I think. That's how the story goes. Mm-hmm. Like, so the Mangog can't get it. He just erases it. It's pretty epic for how bad it is. It's really
yeah. Big. I didn't know. I've heard Mangog before. I didn't know he looked like that. I was very surprised.
It's a very weird, curvy deal.
And speaking of weird, this issue had the single most disturbing thing I've seen in a Marvel comic since we've started this podcast.
Oh, do tell.
The Citrina puts a whammy on them, a spell on them, so they're like not seeing reality. But you don't know that. They just, I think they get knocked out, mm-hmm. and then they're in some kind of like royal parlor room, and they've all got damsels that they are romancing to various degrees. And then some guy's like, hey, this isn't real. Like what you're seeing is not actually happening. And so they shake the whammy of the spell, and it's like all these worm monsters, and they're really disturbing looking. And like the implication is that they have been to some degree intimate with these creatures. At least that's what I thought. Yeah. And I was like,
I think you went a little far there. Cause
did I?
Yeah. But they were definitely hanging out with them, arms around them. Thor got sobered up. So he saw what was really happening, which was just instead of fine ladies, the Warriors Three were hanging out with some pretty goopy, weird demon creatures.
Wormy monster looking things. Yeah, it was so gross.
I don't know that they did any deeds with them, but they definitely were hanging out pretty close.
You don't know that they didn't.
I know. They might have.
Right,
I
mean, yeah, right.
Also, they might have been cool with that. Fandral might be into some weird stuff. I don't know.
I mean, the comics code wouldn't let them put it on the page, but you know, between the gutters. You know.
Exactly. Yeah. You're right.
I also, at one point, Hildegard picks up and flips over a horse.
Yep. Right.
That
right.
was pretty good.
Yeah. That was great.
Yep.
Feel like I've read that one.
Well, there you go. So Hal, those are the issues that you could have read. Hopefully you enjoyed the three that we chose, and I think we're going to go right into talking about Amazing Spider-Man number 105, and Jamie is going to walk us through that.
Sure. So this is, as you said, Amazing Spider-Man 105, The Spider Slayer, written by Stan Lee, art by Gil Kane and Frank Giacoya. So after arriving back in New York City, Spider-Man, with a relatively normal amount of arms from the last time that I had seen him, he's just thinking some happy thoughts. The issue has kind of a fresh start feeling to it, just thinking back on what Douglas had said about, you know, the Spider-Man 100 being kind of like a tipping point for Spider-Man. And so like they seem to have closed out the Morbius business, and so I missed a few. So this seems like a real jumping on point.
Yep. All the way back to normal limb count. Yep.
Right.
And Stan is back.
Yeah,
he's back writing it. He has not been writing for the last few issues. So,
and I think that you can tell.
Yeah, and I think this is the only thing that he writes this month.
I think so. Yeah.
So Spider-Man swings by a protest at the Daily Bugle, where some youths are claiming that instead of reporting on like hunger and the racially oppressed and joblessness, all the media cares about are superheroes. Robbie's son Randy is there, and Randy proves that once again he's like the nicest character in comics by being supportive of his son, who is picketing the job that puts food on their table. Like, he's just the best dude. Yeah.
I believe that my dad, he loved me and, you know, was a great provider. I don't think he would have approved of me picketing his workplace. I think that would have put a strain on our relationship.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. My father was a anti-war protester in college, and I think he would also be like, stop marching in front. Get that sign out of here.
Right.
This is how I pay for your food.
Your stuff. Yeah.
Your stuff.
Yeah.
I do love that as a subplot, by the way, the idea of people being sick of the media only covering superheroes. Like, what a great thread to have just running through an entire comics world in general.
It reminded me of the Marvels, the like the Alex Ross thing, where it's like from the perspective of the actual reporter, and just, I don't know, just superheroes through the lens of like real people.
Yeah,
that's cool. How terrifying they would be.
Yeah. Right.
That guy melted a car. I'm moving. Yeah. New York sucks. Like,
he's handsome or whatever, but I'd like to get to work for once without incident.
That's why you moved to Fun City. Your car might get melted.
So Jonah shows up and argues with the protesters, claiming that he's been fighting for civil rights since before they were born. And then he shoves Randy in the face.
He does.
he grabs his face and pushes backwards. It's crazy. Yeah. I read this page three times. I thought it was fascinating because Jonah is historically unracist, but his rage at being accused by the youth culture of being not unracist enough is like what we've seen happen for the past couple of years. And like many of us have probably felt to some degree. Like, I thought this was super interesting. It's like Jonah's having a real like, but I'm one of the good ones moment. But then he crosses into violence, which makes him like very clearly. So I think it's like, I don't know how in character this is for Jonah overall. But I think they were positioning him for where we need him to be for the rest of the issue.
Well, he needs to be a monster for the right reasons, right? It can't be because he's racist or anything like that. It has to, we have to dislike him because he hates Spider-Man. And he's just sort of generally a like a grumpy, get off my lawn, cheap, aggressive person. So the push is weird. The push feels uncharacteristic. Like he's not that dumb.
Right. Yeah. Right.
That is a group of people. Like if my son or if the son of one of my employees was marching, I certainly wouldn't push someone in the face when there are a lot more of them than there are of me. It's not like there's a it's not like he has a number of bodyguards and police around him to protect him. He's just like, just shoves him in the face.
He is fairly reactionary, though. Yeah. He's defending his, he's just a capitalist and they're, you know, they're threatening his livelihood.
Well, like, and then you imagine him going upstairs and like, Robbie being like, hey, did you see that, you see that mob outside? And Jonah being like, no, they weren't there when I certainly didn't shove anyone.
No big deal.
He also shows up pissed off because they won't let him in the building.
Right.
They're like, no, there's a place. He's like, I own this paper and I own the building. I didn't realize he was that rich that he was a real estate owner. That's a lot of wealth.
Yeah.
Like owning a newspaper is a big deal, but owning buildings.
The building?
In Manhattan, New York?
Yeah. Also, probably not what you want to say to diffuse that particular situation.
I pay your salary, police officers.
Right.
Just Rupert Murdoch yelling in your face.
Right. So Spidey sees this going on and he swings to the sort of rescue of Jonah before the protesters kind of beat him up in response. Jonah, his pride very obviously wounded, takes a swing at Spidey and then Spidey leaves him dangling from a flagpole to cool off. Jonah looks super scared of Spider-Man in this in a way that I haven't registered before. I've never seen him look like upset like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like Spider-Man in this moment, which is not a feeling I think I've ever had before. Like, you know, sometimes you disagree with Peter Parker, like lying to everyone around him for stupid reasons, but like it felt like a little abuse of power or like right up to the line of that. So now Jonah, from his perspective, has been insulted, attacked, emasculated, intimidated, and then ultimately humiliated in front of a crowd of teens.
Yep.
So I thought this scene was like very strange and seemed out of whack both for like Jonah and Spider-Man.
This would give him his motivation to hate Spider-Man if he didn't already irrationally hate Spider-Man. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It feels like in any other issue, this would be like a webbing over the mouth moment.
Yeah, right.
Where he just webs his mouth up and then he's like, oh, see you later, and then takes off.
Yeah, that's cute. You can like slide trombone that to the next scene and be okay with it, but like it felt weird.
And I feel like the panel where he's hanging from the flagpole, I feel like there was maybe a request to add a few people at the bottom of the panel to make it clear that he's not dangling like 50 feet off the ground.
Yes.
But it's more like maybe 10 feet off the ground. But it's still it's awkward. The whole thing is just very strange.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, Jonah now makes like a real bad guy, swears revenge and shouts, you know, you'll see, and we will see in a few pages.
He's not a liar.
Yeah. He's an honest.
He follows through.
Things he is, a liar is not one of them.
Not a liar, not a racist. Everything else is on the table though.
Right. Yeah. Up for grabs.
Not a renter.
So Spidey heads out to one of your standard welcome back from drug addiction parties that all his friends are throwing for Harry Osborn at Aunt May's house. Perfectly normal. All of this is very normal. Peter frets about May being lonely. Then he flirts with her for a little bit and sucks some frosting off his finger.
Yep.
Again, totally normal.
and she threatens to put pepper in it to stop him. Like, one of these days, I'm gonna. But I assume it's hot. At first, I thought it was black pepper, but now the more I think about it, I think she's gonna put hot peppers.
Yeah,
in there.
I feel like everyone's just, for whatever reason in this issue, is just very on the edge.
Everyone's
like willing to escalate things dramatically.
Do it one more time, Peter. Lick the frosting one more time. See what happens. See if I don't put pepper in there. I'm going to do it, Peter. You hate pepper. Son of a bitch. I miss Ben. Ben never put his fingers in the frosting. With great frosting comes great responsibility.
If we had custom episode names, I think that would have been our ding right there.
Yep.
So the gang all arrives, and Flash Thompson's back, as is MJ and Gwen. So we've now have the love quadrangle is kind of back on the table. Peter and Flash are going to get along now, obviously, because it's not like Gwen and Flash are going to start immediately flirting within three panels on that very page. Or are they? P.S. Didn't MJ just dump Harry, which kind of triggered his drug addiction into overdrive?
Yeah, it's weird for her to be there. Yeah,
I thought so, yeah.
Well, it was 28 there, days so. Ago.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Water under the bridge.
Yeah. Make amends. She has to do it too. It's fine.
Right. Yeah, this is, yeah. Everyone's, the gang's getting back together. It's all water under the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
MJ flirts with Peter, which causes Peter to angrily gaze into her eyes, and they put their lips real close together, just as Harry walks in. Harry seems very touched by this gesture. I think he has tears in his eyes at some point, but he also seems shaky, and Peter thinks that maybe something is up. My theory is that this party sucks and was a bad idea to begin with, and maybe that's why he's not doing so well.
And that his dad is the Green Goblin?
Yeah, the Green Goblin has walked him into the party. That's not great either.
Yeah, right. Nothing about this dynamic is good. So then we cut away to the spider-scorned J. Jonah Jameson buying his third Spider Slayer robot from Smythe. Smythe?
Third time's a charm.
Yeah. I say Smythe, yeah.
Yeah. It's totally going to work this time because you see this time the robot is spider-shaped. So
yep, that's what he missed out on the last ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Jonah starts piloting the Slayer after Spider-Man across the roofs of New York, and all the roofs have this like weird tech on them. We don't know what that tech is yet.
Mm-hmm.
The robot's working pretty well, but every so often it doesn't follow Jonah's exact instructions. I'm sure it's fine. Eventually, Spider-Man notices the robots that's been following him for about a fifth of the comic so far.
Mm-hmm.
And then they fight for another five pages because they're actually pretty evenly matched. I thought it was a pretty good fight scene. Seems okay.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, there are some weird bugs in the spider robot that are causing it to occasionally act weird. And then it's revealed that Professor Smythe, the robot maker, has been using this conflict as kind of a smokescreen to steal a powerful computer element, and he's going to frame Spider-Man for the theft.
Sure.
His plan, if I understand it, is to combine the computer element with all the tech on the roofs, which he invented and funded through police money, to form a kind of interconnected net that he will use to control all the police video scanners, which I think are cameras? Video scanners? That's
that
a camera, right?
That he installed also, right? Wasn't that
right? Yeah.
That was, yeah, this is all stuff he's done. Sorry.
Yeah.
You laid a lot of groundwork.
This plan has been in the making.
It was a lot of work, but I'll let you finish. Go ahead and finish.
No, by all means.
Because instead of controlling and stopping crime, he can commit any crime he wants.
Right.
Which is really smart.
Right.
It's a lot of work, but if you get there, all of a sudden, you can do all the crime you want.
The upfront investment is a killer, but once you've got that laid out, once you've made your capital investment, then it's crimes galore.
Yeah, the return on investment spikes.
I wonder what he wants to do. I mean, I'm not without reading the next issue. Like, what is his number? Like, all right, I've been waiting for this. What's crime number one?
Right.
Yeah. Is it going to be like jaywalking?
Yeah. It's pretty vague. Yeah. He says he can spy on anyone, but keep in mind these cameras are stationary, so he can spy on anyone doing a crime or sharing a secret in front of a stationary camera.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
So like the odds of someone doing something crazy in front of a stationary camera is, you know, not great.
Well, I mean, I used to work downtown, and I've seen a lot of people just go ahead and do a meth deal right there. They don't care that there's a camera. They don't care that there's a news station behind them, you know? I'm just saying, they'll still do a crime.
That's only because they own the building, so they can do it.
Right.
It's fine. It's their property. It's private.
So speaking of doing something crazy in front of a stationary camera, Spider-Man gets comfortably in frame of one of these cameras and pops off his mask.
it looks directly at the camera.
Directly at the camera. So now Smythe knows that Spider-Man is actually a human male with a face.
And brown hair.
It's all clear and brown hair.
Yep.
Yeah.
Also, the police are nearby because of the break-in, and they're going to think Spider-Man stole it, so the computer thing. So that's not great either.
Yeah.
But, yeah, then that's our cliffhanger.
It has that same energy of Lex Luthor inhabiting the Flash and then taking off the mask in the mirror and going, I have no idea who this is.
Yeah.
Like, there's no context. To, like, you don't know.
Yeah. It's just a person. There's no database. Like,
mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, oh, a teenager. Sure. Or 20s. At this point, he's in his 20s.
Sure. Right.
Yeah. They're out of, you know, they're out.
So, yeah, it's a, this has happened once before, too, where they, you know, Spider-Man's mask is comes off and everyone's like, it's a guy. He's white. I don't know. Yeah. Like, it's not, it's just a terrible reveal.
Yeah. Yep. Which is funny because it would be very interesting if this comic was today because you could immediately pop that photo into any online thing and be like, oh, it's my neighbor or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right. You would know who it was, but then it was more novel.
Yep.
Yeah, but good to see Stan back on a comic, you know, like aside from some weird character beats, like it is a solid issue of Spider-Man.
Yeah, there's references. I mean, we were talking about the Intel chip, you know, that I think that's what, you know, Smythe is really trying to get this new processor. There's, you know, flashes back from Vietnam talking about the troop withdrawals. So, you know, Stan getting in his, we've got a protest about the journalism covering civil rights. Stan's hitting his beats. His story might get a little weird. There's a robot spider, fine. But yeah, that's what Stan does.
Yeah. And like, as much as I was kind of taking it to task for the weird character stuff, it's like, you couldn't do that unless these are very richly, very specifically, metaphorically drawn characters.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, oh, they're not acting the exact way that I think they would normally act. Like, it's kind of the sign of a great work of art, you know?
Yeah.
Or body of work, at least. Yeah.
It did feel like it was loaded up with a lot of Stan Lee editorializing, like the little, like, here's a reference to this, and you should have, you didn't read these back issues?
Yeah.
F you.
Yeah.
Like, what a dummy, you didn't read those issues. Like, he chastises, like, I felt like I was being attacked personally by Stan Lee more than once reading that issue.
Yep.
I mean, you know, all of a Shalom and everything, may his memory be a blessing to all of us, but I don't appreciate you poking me from beyond the grave while I'm trying to enjoy your work.
Yeah.
I think he disinvited you to Aunt May's party, didn't he? At one point,
I wasn't allowed to go. I'm a big supporter of Harry getting clean.
Yep.
And you're a fan of pepper icing, as far as I've heard.
I love it. It's so good.
Aunt May's threats have nothing on you. It's like, go ahead, May.
Bring it on.
Spice it up.
Put ghost peppers in there. I'm ready.
All right. Well, Jamie, thank you for walking us through Spidey. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about more of the Marvel Comics of November 1971 right here on Marvel by the Month.
Welcome back to Marvel by the Month. Let's talk about Marvel Premiere number one, and Men Shall Call Him Warlock. This is written by Roy Thomas, art by Gil Kane and Dan Adkins. And sort of in this issue, the most important part is him, with a capital H, gets a name.
Yay!
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you listened to us way back when we covered FF number 66 and 67, you'll remember the introduction from Stan and Jack. It's also covered in this book, to a mysterious science created superhuman that was cocooned in what looked like a giant side of ribs and a beehive had a kid.
That's exactly right. That's perfect.
And Applebee's.
Yeah. Oh, Applebee. That would be a great Applebee's commercial, I think. Just a picture of the cocoon. And you're just sort of glistening.
The jingle playing in the background. Yeah.
So when him escaped the cocoon the first time, his creators tried to kill him and others like Alicia Masters. So he judged the enclave of super scientists evil, destroyed their citadel, and took off to space, re-cocooned. When he's not in a cocoon, him is a bronze-skinned superhuman with godlike powers.
Yeah, he's Rocky from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah. So it goes from a side of ribs to Rocky from Rocky Horror Picture Show. Don't confuse that with Rocky the movie where he's punching a side of ribs.
Yeah.
But now that I said Rockies. It. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in true Marvel nonsense, him returns in Thor number 163 through 167 because the Watcher accidentally caught him in a space net for meteors. Some science folk ended up with the cocoon when the Watcher like redirected it to Earth because he's like, whoops, I interfered. Him gets hatched again and does not help Thor stop Pluto from destroying the Earth. Pluto beamed a bunch of mutated future folk to help him overthrow the world. Instead, him decides that the Lady Sif should be his mate. Thor gets very upset to the point of a bad case of warrior madness and hits him very hard. Him throws some boulders at Thor with his mind and then re-cocoons and heads into space again. Didn't even need to be there for any
of
this.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, there's a weird optical illusion on page 10. If you look at his leg, Thor's leg, it looks like his calf, the yellow, is completely disconnected from the blue of his thigh. It's very, very weird.
Floating leg.
Doesn't it look like a floating calf with like a black blob on top of it?
Yep.
Yes, that's unsettling.
Not as much as those worms that Thor was making out with that other one.
True,
that other issue.
True.
So, go ahead.
Nope, go ahead.
You want to make fun of Thor some more?
I got no more Thor material, sorry.
So now onto the actual meat of this issue. We start with our old pal, the High Evolutionary, as he is lamenting his failed experiment to create the new men, which made a bunch of animal people and Wolfman, known as Man-Beast, that is especially vicious. His new plan is to make a counter-Earth and quickly evolve all of its life to a perfect state that is not predisposed to war and fighting. Such a nice God-man.
Yeah, he's not a bad guy. For all intents and purposes, he's a heroic sort of figure, right?
He's doing his best.
He certainly thinks so. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Sort of a eugenics thing, though, too.
All right. I hear you.
But yeah. He is making this. He wants to make this counter-Earth as sort of a Garden of Eden, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So for people keeping score, the High Evolutionary, a.k.a. Herbert Wyndham, first appeared in Thor number 134 with a mention in 133. He has shown up again in Incredible Hulk number 102 as well. He beamed the Hulk up to a ship as things went wrong, as happens when you put Hulk in a spaceship.
Was he Herbert from the jump, or did they retcon that in later?
No, he was
retconned
Herbert.
It later.
Oh no.
Ooh.
I thought he was Herbert, the science man named Herbert, who changed himself into the High Evolutionary. No, he just shows up as.
I don't know if we know that he's Herbert yet, but I don't know. I'm not an expert on Marvel comics or anything. So.
We have to get into one more aside, a little info about the counter-Earth from Wikipedia.
This is not something that was invented just for this comic, right?
Right.
I mean, this is a long running idea.
Since most of civilization. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a hypothetical body of the solar system that orbits on the other side of the sun from the Earth, or the solar system from the Earth. Right. A counter Earth or Antikython was hypothesized by the pre-Socratic Greek philosopher Philolaus in 470 BC to support his non-geocentric cosmology, in which all objects in the universe revolve around a central fire unseen from Earth and distinct from the sun, which also revolves around it. that in modern times, a hypothetical planet always on the other side of the sun from Earth has been called a counter-Earth and has been a recurring theme in UFO claims as well as in fiction, particularly, you know, science fiction.
Yeah, I think that, like, I want to say, like, the Superman radio show, maybe from the 40s or 50s, I think they talk about Krypton as being basically a counter-Earth. Like, it's directly across the sun from us, and it has the same orbit, so we never see it, but that's where it comes from. So, yeah.
And it's such a cool idea. I when I first read this, or like counter-Earth stuff as a kid, I was like, yeah, that tracks. I'm cool with that.
I can't see it. The sun's in the way.
Yeah.
If you just stare at the sun long enough, you'll find it. Just keep looking.
Right. I mean, as long as it's not an angry Sunday.
Right.
You know, I feel like as long as comic books have existed, that there has been a knock from people who dislike them that they're anti-intellectual or, you know, there's somehow a lower class form of entertainment. But if you read this, you need a thesaurus to get yes. Like, you have to have taken some English courses specifically studying maybe Shakespeare and how he structured sentences to really get a good grasp on what is being written here, because it is a group of, you know, comic book writers are very smart people, but it made me realize just how far that writing has come, because now it's a lot more. I read these in reverse order. I started with this, then I went Hulk in the middle, and then I finished with Spider-Man, knowing, all right, by the time I get to Spidey, it's going to be a little bit more, at least, of like, let's have a character who talks the way humans talk.
Right.
And even that one was a little bit more, like, Spidey was there. You got, like, Jive. You got all sorts of Dig.
Yeah, like, yeah, right.
Some great early 70s stuff. But this is just, in addition to it being a flashback inside a flashback plus a flat, like, remember all these things that happened in other comics? There's five pages of things that happen here.
Yeah. Yes.
But the rest of it, you just have, it's just frames borrowed. Like, here's Thor and all of these things. It is crazy. It's very dense and very, like, the way the High Evolutionary speaks, the way everybody speaks, really, the way Warlock, at the soon-to-be-named Adam Warlock speaks, like, just everybody is. This is very flowery and dense language.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there's iambic pentameter all over this thing, you know?
Yeah, sure.
It reeks of Thor. I always think of that as being those Thor comics that were way more sweeping and Shakespearean in the text, but this one is.
Yep. They talk like gods. I mean, they're.
Yeah.
But that's what we came here for, is the bronzy golden god, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So right near where the High Ev, he lets me call him that, is going to make counter-Earth. He encounters a floating beehive side of Rib's cocoon in space.
What could it be? What could it be?
Oh, he beams it aboard and starts a video chat with him inside his cocoon.
They're FaceTiming.
They're just FaceTiming. He's still in there.
Yeah. You up? Yeah. That might be the weirdest part of this whole very strange thing. Like, that they're like.
He's got a lot of tech.
If you put your ear to the cocoon, do you think they could he hear him through the cocoon if they were like in contact?
Like, a glass. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So I was born on Earth, and then my ship was over to space. I came back, I fought with Thor, now I'm back in space. I'm just waiting. You know, it's a time that I'm really working on me, and then eventually I'm going to pop out. I said, eventually I'm going to pop out of here. Do you have FaceTime? This would be a lot easier if I was on your video screen.
Yeah. It also smells like me in here. That's what I,
It stinks. I don't talk about it a lot, but it smells really bad. There's no port on this. You'd think that those holes on the side would be ventilation. They're not. They're just decorative knobs. I said they were decorative knobs. Seriously, FaceTime?
So the High Ev is also excited about the meeting a new also immortal ultra human that he thinks of kind of as a son already that could hang out with him and help him make this perfect world. So we've got
this person is who's creating an Eden of sorts is now excited that he's got a son.
Yeah.
Okay. But does he have many sons, or just would you call him like
just the one given son that
he's
showed
only
up.
Really, he's only really begotten that one.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Really weird. Okay. His only son.
Yeah. So the High Evolutionary shares his whole plan with him and starts whisking up a world. Check out the splash page on 15. Yeah. Beautiful Gil Kane montage with the High Evolutionary and some Kirby tech and classic Gil Kane weird animals that obviously aren't anatomically correct. but it's cool looking.
Yeah. And he mentions that he's been working for a mere 70 hours. So
yeah,
that'd be what, about like 5 or 6 days to this point?
I'm thinking it's about 6 days. So yeah. he gets everything evolved to about the Homo sapiens level. But then he needs a nap. I mean, he's worked for 6 days pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
So he rests, and it's unfortunate because he only had the one more thing left to do on his list, which was to cleanse the killer instinct from his new Adam, as he calls the Homo sapiens down there. But he's also been spied upon by his own failed creation, the Man Beast, just the whole time. So Man Beast has his own, you know, cameras in here. He can FaceTime if he wants. So Man Beast waits until the nap and then heads over to the High Ev's ship to do a Serpent in the Garden of Eden routine. And he and his evil new men fight through some good new men, including Lord Ram. And Man Beast takes revenge on his creator.
So Lord Ram is he's a sheep, right? He's a ram, evolved ram. I found myself just really, really hoping that there was going to be a sirloin who was an evolved cow. But I didn't get it, and I'm really disappointed.
Sirloin was off panel, but you know he was there.
He was there.
So the revenge isn't against the sleeping High Evolutionary. It's just twisting some knobs and instilling the killer instinct into the humans of Counter-Earth, spoiling the whole experiment. So that's his big plan, is to just make more crappy people that kill each other. So High Ev wakes up and starts fighting with Man Beast and the other evil new men. They begin to overtake him, and finally him with the capital H, who's watching from the video screen, uncocoons yet again and fights bad animal men. Him now has a cooler outfit, though, when he pops out. It's a red tunic with a gold belt, gold wristbands, and gold boots on his chest.
He's basically got Shazam's outfit.
Yeah, but with more showing more skin, I think.
With like a dab of or a pinch of He-Man. There's a very He-Man-esque quality.
He-Man vibes, sure.
On his chest, in the center of the red, is a gold lightning bolt. And on the center of the belt, his gold belt, is an inverted peace symbol. The High Evolutionary.
Does that stick around? I wonder if that sticks around.
I don't know. I didn't recall it as anything important, but it sure stood out to me when I was just taking in all of the him of it.
Sure. It's a lot of him.
Yeah.
It's a lot of him.
Hunk a hunk of him.
The High Evolutionary then starts to trash his newest failed creation. He's like, you know what? Program screwed up. Well, you're going to throw that away. So him insists that he does not trash it, but instead let him go down to shepherd their way to goodness. So the High Evolutionary is going to send down this new found son that of godlike powers to help the flawed people find their way to peace.
Oh, kind of redeem them in a way.
Yeah.
All right.
Interesting. It's just a fresh new take on godlike things. So the high evolutionary then agrees, beams him down, and as he does, he attaches a mysterious green jewel to him's head, and he says this about it: I spoke of a boon, something which may protect you from the snares of the Man Beast, or which may not. This emerald blazing like a great green star upon your brow, of which you shall learn more anon. And that's it. That's what we get to know about that.
In the 80s.
It'll be a while.
This will be cleared up.
Yeah. Jim Shooter will clear, or Starlin will clear the
Starlin. He'll explain.
So as him descends toward Counter-Earth, we learn that men shall call you Warlock. And thank goodness for ending this pronoun hell.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That's... Now, the stone he has in his head is the reality gem, right? Is that right? Is he
talking about
the reality gem?
Soul gem.
That's the soul stone. Yes. Yep. That's what he has. Just get that soul stone.
I don't know if I've ever said this before. I love Adam Warlock. I'm a huge Adam Warlock fan. Maybe everyone is. Yeah, okay. I don't know. I didn't know if that was just me or not. But yeah, I think he's great. And this is the first time I've read this or anything in this era. And I was like, oh, I wonder where this goes next. So I read this pretty late. And I was like, you know what? Before I close my eyes for the night, I'm just going to go to the Warlock Wikipedia page. I'm just going to give that a quick, just a quick kind of.
That's a rabbit hole. Yeah.
It's like 1:30 a.m. And I was like, oh my God, am I still reading about Adam Warlock? I just want to go to sleep.
Over 51 years old, but yeah, quick. Are you excited to see him on screen?
I am. I'm very curious to see what happens with that, especially with the way they introduced him with all those the gold people and the perfect people or whatever that was from Guardians.
Because that's the second time they teased him. He was teasing the first one too, because the cocoon was in Tendler Tavon's collection.
Yep.
Yeah,
and it was confirmed. And that one looked a lot more like the rib turd that he flew around in space.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's like since they already did the Infinity. Epic or saga or whatever, why would they bring him in? Like, what are they doing? You know, like where is that leading? It wasn't leading to the saga.
If you play video games, and I know you do, the Guardians of the Galaxy game, Adam Warlock plays a very prominent part in. So,
really, it's
worth the play. It's a fun game. It's weird to hear different voice actors. You know, sometimes that happens with characters in the Marvel universe. There's just there might be a voice for one villain, and then it's a different voice in a different medium. You know, that could happen.
You never know. I mean, it sounds far-fetched to me personally. I'm going to trust your instinct on it.
So yeah, it's a fun game, and it introduced Adam Warlock to my wife Barb. I have a Mike Allred drawing of Adam Warlock in the hallway framed up, and she's like, oh, that's the guy from the hallway. Oh, cool. Yeah. That isn't
the hallway guy.
That's the hallway guy.
So you've just had a golden figure with a lightning bolt costume in your hall, and she was just
doesn't care. Yeah,
that's just awesome.
Yeah,
that is truly awesome.
She's been around me most of our lives. She's pretty. She just doesn't even ask questions.
Doesn't about ask
whatever action figure or something that popped up. You know,
it's like just don't ask a question that you don't really want the answer to.
You don't want the five and a half hour answer to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
if you'll just accompany me to Wikipedia.
Every time my wife and I watch a Marvel film, I pause it like 50 times right now. Here's what's happening. She had not seen Multiverse of Madness, which I showed her, and I stopped like 12 times because I'm like, you should be impressed by this Illuminati scene. Do you understand what version of Professor X this is? And that was the music from the 1990s animated. Nope, you're asleep. Great. Okay, good. I'm going to stop talking and press play.
Yeah.
That was exactly, I'm like, and they've brought over, you know, we've got Anson Mount as Black Bolt.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Barb's like, I like Anson Mount from that Hell on Wheels show. Don't give a crap about anything else you said. Let's just keep going here. Yeah.
Nothing really sets a romantic mood like the phrase, the theme from the 90s X-Men cartoon.
Oh my gosh. It's like Sonic Candlelight.
Yep.
Yeah. It really is. I'm a romancer. What can I say?
That finally broke my smile muscles.
God. Well, I guess that's the debut of Adam Warlock.
There we go.
Now refer to Adam Warlock with an actual proper noun, which is great.
He does go by he, him, too, if you want his pronouns.
Oh, no. Have we not made that joke yet before?
That's a bum. Well, okay, so that's our Marvel Comics of November 1971. The last thing that we do here is to give our astonishing takes, which are things that we might recommend to our listeners that are not necessarily the Marvel Comics from November 1971. I will go first with a recommendation that Rob beat me to several episodes ago. But, you know, we recommend each other's things. Basically, you know, we share the same brain, so it's not particularly noteworthy that we're recommending the same things. But when we both recommend it, you know that it's definitely worth checking out. So recommendation is for Barbalian Red Planet by Tate Brombal, Jeff Lemire. Is that how we're saying it?
Yep.
Okay. Jeff Lemire and Gabriel Hernandez Walta. So this is a side story set in the Black Hammer universe, which is basically the Marvel and or DC comics universes with the serial numbers partially filed off. Mm-hmm. And when Black Hammer is at its best, I think it tells it'll tell a story using those characters and tropes that the original publishers either couldn't or wouldn't tell. So, for example, Barbalian, who is the Black Hammer version of the Martian Manhunter, is romantically attracted to human men, which, I mean, kind of makes sense for a shape-shifting alien who's never had any sort of romantic linkage to any other character. Hmm. Red Planet tells a really heartbreaking love story set at ground zero of the AIDS crisis and 80s gay activism. And it also finally makes the Martian Manhunter interesting for the first time in like 60 years. So you don't have to be familiar with any of the previous Black Hammer stories or the Martian Manhunter, for that matter, to appreciate what the creators have done. I think it's a really powerful story. It stands on its own two legs. Any other comics context that you're able to bring to it, it's just sort of a cherry on top, which is, I think, when Black Hammer works best. So
yeah,
that's my recommendation.
I totally agree. I picked that one up just because my wife is named Barb Allen, and I thought Barb Alien was super hilarious, and I wanted to show her it, and then read it and went, this is heavy, and then recommended it.
This isn't funny at all.
Yeah, she did not care, as you know, we've already mentioned. Anyway, so for me, as you know, we've recommended some of the Something Is Killing the Children. I think probably one or both of us has, Brian. I was reading House of Slaughter, Volume 1, The Butcher's Mark by James Tynan, is how it's pronounced, and Werther Deladera. But this is put out, is that right?
Just a little pronunciation correction. I think it's actually The House of Slaughter.
Oh, you jerk. Trying so hard.
They have that needle point, right, in the inside foyer that just says Sliv, Slaff, Slove.
Oh, man. Anyways, this is put out by Boom Studios in January of 2022. It's a prequel to Something Is Killing the Children, and it sets up more of the history behind the mentors, peers, and leadership behind the House of Slaughter. Mostly following Jace as his unlikely path through the trials of becoming a monster hunter. And it was another fun dip into Tynan's universe and the painful calculus of killing monsters and keeping them a secret from the rest of the world. So all of the stuff of the Order of St. George, and just it was a prequel that I was interested in. Sometimes mm-hmm. People in make their universes make prequels that could almost ruin everything until like a Mandalorian could come along and so check it out.
Books with Pictures sent or maybe tweeted some kind of image of this, and Allie thought it looked very cool, and so I bought it for her. So I don't know if she's read it yet. I haven't gotten to it, but I'll definitely be checking that one out.
It's good stuff. Yeah.
I have recently been recommending a lot of very obvious things. I was doing that for a while. you know, your Watchmen and things of that. And I actually stumbled accidentally into another very obvious recommendation, which is The Sandman.
Oh, yes.
yeah. If you haven't read Neil Gaiman's The Sandman, you should read it because it's unbelievably epic and amazing. It is the story of Morpheus, who is the Lord of Dreaming. But it pulls from literature, it pulls from mythology, it pulls from comic books. It is just the craziest mash of words and stuff. I haven't read it since I was like, I don't know, I probably haven't read it in 20 years. Mm-hmm. And it's the first time I'm revisiting it with any kind of lens for comic books. And it is truly astounding. Not for the faint-hearted, but the first arc is very horror in a way that I hadn't really remembered. I was pretty shocked by it. I mean, it's pretty intense. Mm-hmm. So I didn't Love that. And who's the artist in the beginning?
Sam
Keith. It's the Max guy. Yeah,
Sam
right.
Keith, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that felt like a weird fit for a while. But as the story progresses, like the art is kind of all over the place in a really cool way because it works with the story. Mm-hmm. It's just a really great pairing of artist and art and story and narrative. And yeah, so I'm about maybe 3/4 of the way through and just completely enthralled. I highly, highly recommend it. It is a lift, though. I will say that.
Yeah, I actually just started rereading it recently as well. So
no way, really?
It holds up beautifully. Yeah. So I second.
Oh, wait.
Everyone should read it before this TV series comes out, just so you can, if you haven't already, and you really should have, like, don't be one of those people who waits for the TV show.
Yeah, yeah.
Sandman, that's like a, that, yeah, that would be tough. Even Barb had owned the Sandman graphic novel.
See? We have
two. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Hal, do you have a recommendation for our listeners?
I do. Here's a comic book that you... don't have to worry about ever being made into a television series because it stopped in 1971. Now, as a child, my first comic book love was Archie because that was something my mother turned me on to. We would get double. I have a right below the Uncle John's bathroom readers a row of Archie digests and double digests from my childhood. So
awesome.
anywhere in the 80s to the early 90s. But another book I have that I think may be among those is Sugar and Spike. If you don't know what Sugar and Spike is, Sugar and Spike are a couple babies that can't speak adult talk. They speak baby talk to each other. And it's about their adventures navigating the world of being a baby. They have Bernie the Brain, who's a genius baby who invents things and sends them to space, sends them back in time, gives them guns so they can get cookies because they love cookies and candy. And I'm sure, considering it ran from 1956 to 1971, there's a ton of stuff that wouldn't fly in 2022. But I feel like there's enough wholesome stuff in there for you to enjoy. So I'm going to recommend it. Go check it out. It is a treasured memory of mine from childhood reading it. And I can't even tell you why. It's just like a warm blanket when you're cold. And I suggest you check it out. It's cute. It is an offshoot. It's Sheldon Mayer has created mm-hmm. it and did it until he died.
I think he did. Oh, wow. I think that's the reason it ended. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they did bring back the characters in 2016 as adults. And Bernie the Brain is in Crisis on Infinite Earths. Like they're still around in the universe. So, yeah, they brought him back as adults, but I refuse to read that. Just like I refuse to watch Riverdale because I like the saccharine. I'm sure it's great if you love it. More power to you. But I like the saccharine, like just schlocky Archie that I grew up with. I don't need to see them banging teachers and each other. There are enough other comics I can see that. I can just watch Hulk. He's banging. He's banging like crazy. He's having bang parties. There's cigar tip tickling happening in the corner. That's fine. Give me my wholesome Archie and enjoy Sugar and Spike.
Back when comics were for children.
Yeah.
Oh, well, great recommendation. And Hal Lublin, thank you so much for returning to Marvel by the Month. It is always a pleasure to talk about weird old Marvel comics with you. By the time we have you on next time, we should be into the Claremont Burn X-Men. So we're almost there. The promised land is within sight.
My favorite comic artist. I'm excited.
Yeah. So where can our listeners learn about what you're up to and what should they be sure to be checking out?
You can follow me at Hal Lublin, and you can listen to the three active podcasts I have going, which are We Got This with Mark and Hal, Tights and Fights, both of which are a Maximum Fun, and Good Morning Night Vale, part of the Night Vale Presents Network. Also, you can listen to, so if you're listening to this, you're a Marvel fan, you can listen to all of the episodes of Squirrel Girl Unbeatable Radio Show, in which I play MODOK in a few episodes. I think I have another bit part or two in there, but that was like a big... I was so excited to do it. Like, this is a childhood dream come true to be in something Marvel. And so I hope you enjoy it. But I hope that unlike Jamie, you're not forced to, like Sisyphus, listen to the episodes they stack on top. Like, listen to them at your leisure and at your pleasure as many times as you want, but no more than that.
You know what? If I listen to them again tomorrow, I will fully enjoy them. They're just... You find something new every time. It's great.
That's really, really well written. Really, really fun stuff.
Yeah, I'm fingers crossed that there's more coming.
I hope.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us. If you're listening this far and you haven't already done it, consider subscribing to our Patreon for the fantastic price of $4 a month at patreon.com/marvelbythemonth and get exclusive content. You can review us on Apple Podcasts or whatever you're using to listen to us. And if you'd like some free stuff in the mail, send us a screenshot of your 5-star review to marvelbythemonth@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at marvelbythemonth, and marvelbythemonth.com has links to our other social channels as well as our shop. So that is it for this week. My name is Brian Stratton.
I'm Rob Milne.
And I'm Jamie Winger.
And we'll see you next week for next month. Until then, stay safe, stay healthy, and stay inside and read comics.